This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. Tonight, in the studio, we've got Dean.
G'day.
Hello, Damien.
Hi.
And I'm Matt. Now, the beauty of radio is that I could be sitting here in a pair of old trackies and a footy jumper, and you listeners would never know.
Instead but you're
the,
not.
Instead of the usual jock strap we have to put up with.
No, tonight I am much more aware of how I am dressed. Tonight we are taking a guided stroll down the catwalk of gay fashion to critique what's hot and what's not on gays past and present. Does culture impact fashion? Or is it fashion that influences culture? Have we lost our outrageous campness in a sea of modern-day conservatism? And while Melbourne may see itself pretty highly in the fashion stakes, we will ask that mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the best-dressed gaze of them all?
To help with the fashion challenged amongst us, tonight we have the glamorous pleasure of welcoming Dr. Sean Cole. He is a writer, lecturer, curator, and currently program director for curation and culture at the London College of Fashion. He is also an expert in underwear, aren't we all? We'd like to share some Aussieisms with him. What do you call your underwear?
Your undies.
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 That's
it. I think we can do better than undies, actually. There's a million jocks. Names. Right. Oh, jocks, yes.
There's quite a few, actually.
Actually, so. Reg Grundy's. I wonder if he's heard Reg Grundy's, because Reg Grundy was an Australian TV person. That's where the name came from, Reg Grundy.
Back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, I believe.
The black and white.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities, from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
We're starting off tonight in the United Kingdom, and I love this story, and it got a lot of attention on our Facebook page, W3Joy. A surprisingly large number must have been tickled pink by this story.
It had to do with guys in the shower, so I'm not that surprised.
I think it's probably the photo did draw them in. You know, you're a shallow bunch, listeners, what can I say? But the Conservative bunch filmed some pre-election cinema advertisements, because, you know, they can be a bit saucier than the TV ones.
Right.
And they portrayed a gay couple in a shower, but they were coming out as Conservative. And it was part of a racy series.
It was a comedy?
Well, no, it was in the last election. So the idea was that these ads, which were very expensive, they're estimated to have cost between 100,000 quid to 500,000 quid, so half a million. They were produced and they were intended to appeal to people that might be leaning conservative but are a little bit iffy about coming out to their friends and family as conservative. So the one that relates to the gay community, it included two, you know, traditionally handsome young gay men in a sports shower changing room. And one says, "It feels so right. I'm going to tell everyone." And the other then puts a hand to his friend's mouth as part of an embrace and says, "I think I am too." And then the camera pans around to reveal the men's teammates looking on in horror, and a vote conservative slogan is suddenly revealed.
So the tagline, "I've never voted Tory before," and you're coming out of the closet.
That's it. And they had some other ones as well with an Asian teenage boy, and he looks like he's furtively looking at pornography, and then it's revealed to be the Conservative Party website or something. And his mother expresses horror and asks what the neighbours would think. So the idea is, they're quite clever, and it was meant to appeal to people who thought of backing the Tories and wouldn't have done it in the past. But the problem is they ended up getting scrapped and they haven't been shown, because the risk is that they would have alienated their more traditional core supporters who don't like the idea of men showering together and touching each other's mouths.
Well, that was a good use of £500,000 there.
Well, you know, that's all donations, I suppose. I don't know. It wouldn't be taxpayers' dollars. So, well, I hope not anyway.
Let's hope not.
I wonder if Bronwyn was advising them.
Maybe she flew a chopper. Let's look up in the air. I can't hear a chopper.
Maybe she she flew a helicopter over to London.
Across to the USA now. The US Equal Opportunity Commission has issued a landmark ruling that affirms that employment discrimination against lesbian, gay and bisexual employees is against federal law. Interestingly, they didn't make any stipulation on transgender employees because they are already protected under the law.
This is a big story because the whole thing was after the Supreme Court of the United States said that marriage equality was legal and enforced across all the states only a few weeks ago. The argument was that the next step was anti-discrimination because...
Well, that was quick.
Yeah, they only had state-based discrimination. And, of course, now the whole is the US Equal Opportunity Commission has said, no, you'll have that too.
And it was a 5-0. It was a unanimous decision that brought this in. So it's, again, this snowball effect that these very big law changes are having, both in Ireland and US, to, accelerate gay rights, LGBT rights.
Of course, you can hear the wailing and gnashing of teeth of the conservative forces as we speak from all the way across the ocean. But, you know, it's a really good step. So the individual gay and transgender laws are almost non-existent. 28 states actually lack any state-level protection at all. So this helps override that.
Now, potentially heading in the other direction, we're up to Finland now, where a petition opposing gay marriage reached its 50,000 target, which is a citizens' initiative. And when a petition within a certain time frame reaches its target, it means that Finland's parliament must debate the issue. So this is an anti-gay marriage
petition. I remember this. Wasn't this what helped us get it over the line
That's
in the first
right.
place?
If you go to our website, joy.org.au/worldwide wave, the Finland show was all about the citizens' initiative that got gay marriage on the agenda in Finland.
So here comes the pushback.
Here comes the pushback, exactly. In fact, the president has had some awkward feelings with this, in that they've just brought in this law. 50,000 people, look, it's not a big target really, is it?
It's not a big country, really, I mean, in terms of population, but they'll have to debate it. But I think it's going to be quite hard for them, given that Finland's, you know, technically part of Scandinavia.
It was the last part of Scandinavia to bring into place marriage equality.
I can't see it happening because one thing that they're very big on is not being like their other neighbours, Russia. So, you know, they want to be as Scandinavian as possible. That's the whole thing. Now, if we move on to Africa, it's a good news story. Not at all, because it is Africa. Yeah, so...
Lies.
Yeah, lies. That's it. So, it is Kenya. So, 19 students have been suspended from a Kenyan high school because they took the pro side in a gay rights debate. Now, you would think that...
Hang on a minute.
Well, that's it. I mean, in a debate, someone has to take the pro side, regardless of what the debate is. But, unfortunately, they were accused of being a little bit too... enthusiastic about defending the rights of same-sex couples and gay people. So the other side dobbed them in for being a bunch of, you know, bunch of Nancy boys.
So they accused their fellow students of being homosexuals. The principal then sent them home for a week pending an investigation into the allegations against them.
Yes, and they have to report back to the school with their parents, basically, to argue. You know, I mean, the whole thing is just the biggest pile of rubbish that you can possibly imagine. So I think it was probably that the other side were thinking, well, this is a good way to get rid of them and look, win and by proxy.
In fact, gay rights issues in Kenya are heightened at the moment because President Obama is heading there, and there have already been people speaking up saying they don't want him talking about the gays while he's there.
Absolutely. Now, in brief, the New Zealand government is changing the way it records gender, so allowing people to self-identify as gender diverse.
In the Philippines, 84% of Filipinos oppose gay marriage.
And up in Sweden, the Swedish Armed Forces have launched a new pride campaign calling on all service members to be free to serve openly. That's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
The show that goes around the world one country at a time. We're talking about fashion tonight.
Dr. Sean Cole, welcome.
Hello.
Now, you're a writer, lecturer, curator from the UK. What's brought you out here to Australia?
I'm on a research sabbatical at RMIT. For 4 weeks, doing some research on a new book I'm writing, which is about gay men and their relationship with fashion, clothing, their dressed appearance in the 21st century.
Is there enough information to write a book on?
I think there's enough to write 3 or 4 books on. So, you know, it's narrowing it down will be the issue, I think.
How did you get involved in fashion, and in particularly gay fashion?
I'd always been interested in fashion. As a child, my favourite museum was the what was then called the Costume Museum in Bath. I loved it. Then got involved in subcultures through my teenage years. Then started work at the Victoria and Albert Museum, where people knew I was interested in fashion. I looked after fashion-related collections there. Not the clothes, but prints and those kinds of things. And then when the museum was doing its street style exhibition, I was asked to do some research for that, including research around gay men's dress. And one of the curators said, you really need to write this up. There wasn't anything written. You know, there was lots written about lesbians and clothing, but not much really about gay men, which is surprising and when you think...
There's not even a Wikipedia page. If you put gay fashion, there's not even a Wikipedia page. Now, that's saying something, because there's a Wikipedia page for everything.
I'm missing a trick there, aren't I? That's my homework.
Now, you've one of the things you've done already while you've been out here is you went to the Bowie exhibition and you're a part of a forum there. David Bowie did... I mean, he's such a colourful, dynamic presence when we look at fashion. Did queer influence David Bowie, or did David Bowie influence queer in terms of fashion, do you think?
I think it's probably one of those really difficult things to try and separate. Bowie studied under Lindsay Kemp, the queer mime artist. He was involved with Andy Warhol. Well, Andy Warhol's troupe when they came to London for a production of Pork. He was living in a kind of bizarre, countercultural, hippie house in southeast London in the late 60s, early 70s. I think he was probably well aware of what was going on with kind of burgeoning gay rights cultures. So, you know, on one hand, I think he was influenced by that. But then I think his influence on queer culture was probably that momentous announcement to Melody Maker, I think it was, in 72, that, you know, he was bisexual.
Which in the 70s is probably a little bit out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, he's since denied that, his bisexuality. But I think that, and, you know, there are lots and lots of reminiscences if you look at lots of gay oral histories, and certainly now out gay musicians, people like Boy George, Holly Johnson, Steve Strange, all talk about the impact David Bowie had, particularly Mick Rock's photograph of him going down on Mick Ronson's guitar.
Yeah.
And
Mick Ronson was a very heterosexual man.
Well, the whole of the Spiders from Mars were extremely heterosexual. Yeah. It was only Bowie himself who was the queer one.
Who forced them all to wear eyeliner.
Absolutely. And apparently they all hated it until they realised that the girls liked it. But the other moment was certainly in Britain was David Bowie's first appearance on Top of the Pops doing Starman, when he puts his arm around Mick Ronson. Which, you know, we had a debate at the conference. There was a debate at the conference whether or not that was a kind of a queer moment or whether it was just a laddish, friendly moment. But I think, you know, those things can be read, however. And I think to see somebody as bizarre and unusual looking and androgynous as David Bowie and Mick Ronson, who, you know, pushed the boundaries of what a man should look like in that kind of intimate position, I think is a very queer thing and had a big influence.
It would have led to later artists like, say, Gary Numan, with, you know, bleached white hair and wearing like black plastic clothes, appearing on Top of the Pops and just freaking everyone out a few years later as well.
All of that generation of musicians and club owners all cite Bowie. You know, in fact, the whole early 80s Blitz club scene started as Bowie nights.
What makes the difference between one person just, you know, wearing something garish in order to get publicity and somebody who has transformed and influenced people through their fashion like Bowie did?
That's a really hard one to answer. I think because Bowie was out there as a public figure, you know, he had the
audience
impact, and, you know, he was so new, he so pushed the boundaries. If you look at all of the other people doing glam rock, he was the one who pushed things to the boundaries. He was doing things. You know, when everybody else in glam rock had long hair, he had short, bright red dyed hair. You know, he was the first one really wearing Japanese designers, Kansai Yamamoto's kind of women's wear collection, in fact, not even Kansai's menswear. So, you know, he really was doing things that were pushing. And I think because he had that, because he was a musician, because he was out there, people were influenced by him.
How much of it do you think was because of the development of new fabrics in that period? Like in the 60s and 70s, you had different weaves, you had metallic fabrics.
Are you reminiscing? You
know, well, just in terms of, I mean, I was born in 1975, but I know from what people have said to me that in the 70s, you know, you couldn't buy stretch jeans. You had to buy them and go and sit in a hot bath and have them shrink on you, and then they'd be the right size. So, and I know that that's one of the things the Beatles capitalized on, because they could get these shiny satins and things that previously weren't available. I mean, how much of it is basically just right place, right time?
Well, arguably everything is right place, right time, isn't it? And I think, you know, the 70s saw, or the late 60s certainly saw, a change in textile manufacture, lots of exploration, lots of textiles, new textiles that were developed much earlier, sort of pre-war and pre-Second World War kind of stopped. So, you know, kind of man-made fibres like nylons and all of those brand names for that, and the use of things like lurex, which is a kind of metallic weave fabric, certainly, I think, meant, and plastic, certainly the 60s saw a kind of introduction of new plastics in clothing. So people like John Stephen were doing it for men, Mary Quant was doing it for women. And I think that led to a kind of the space race, space age moment of kind of suddenly looking to the future.
Velcro.
Yeah. We are speaking with Dr. Sean Cole from the London College of Fashion, and we're going to speak more with him about gay fashion, underwear, and how Australia fits in.
This is David Wadali from the Ubuntu Foundation, Malawi, Southern Africa, on the World Wide Web, on Joy 94.9.
We are, of course, talking about fashion, are we not, Matt?
The world of gay fashion. We have Dr. Sean Cole with us from the London College of Fashion. Sean, when did gay fashion first become a thing, first become recognisable in our history? Or has it?
Well, It's funny, the word fashion. I mean, I think you can look back historically and see the ways in which gay people, or what we might now call gay people, have dressed differently. You know, certainly there was a Molly subculture in Britain in the 18th century of cross-dressers.
Molly! That's a word I haven't heard for a long time.
But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that was fashion, though some of the texts from the period do kind of talk about those men aping fashionable women's clothing. For me, the moment of kind of gay fashion, I guess, is the 1960s. So it was that point when there was an explosion of interest in fashion for men, both gay and straight. But certainly in London, the Carnaby Street explosion was predicated partly by one particular man who ran a shop called Vince's Man Shop. So Bill Green was a physique photographer who started selling, the link to underwear here, started selling a posing pouch because he couldn't photograph his models nude. It became very popular. He then went to France, brought back imported clothes, started selling them to what were described as Chelsea theatricals and actors. And then, you know, one of his shop assistants was John Stephen, who then took that model and kind of exploded menswear across London. So there's a very gay moment, I think, in the late 1950s, early 1960s,
but
of fashion.
There have always been dandies, though, going back to Beau Brummel's day.
But I think not necessarily gay. I mean, Brummel, to our knowledge, wasn't. I guess Wilde dressed in a very particular way. You know, he was an advocate of aesthetic dress, so he was dressing in a way that wasn't the usual way for men to dress. So I think there have been, and you know, that's why I say it's a very difficult question to answer that simple question. There have been, and I think there are identifiable characters throughout history who have engaged with their dressed appearance in a particular way to express their sexual orientation.
And of course, there's an androgyny that started to become, I suppose, came to the forefront in the 1960s and 70s as well.
Yeah, and again, you know, some of that was gay. I think you also had a breaking down. I think with, you know, the rise of second wave feminism, with the rise of gay rights, all of those positions that people are traditionally sat in began to be questioned. And so why should I look a certain way? You know, lots of people, you know, we saw women wearing trousers, we saw women cut their hair short, we saw men grow their hair long, we saw men start to wear those fabrics we were talking about earlier, the colours that, you know, pink shirts became, you know, men wouldn't have been seen dead in pink shirts, and suddenly...
There's a stereotype there that gay men are at the forefront of fashion. You know, what happens in the gay community today is regular dress tomorrow. Is that true, or is that just a stereotype?
I think you could make an argument that there are a group of gay men. I wouldn't say that gay men
are any in this room
down for this. We're exclusively responsible. I think, you know, there are sets of men who are at the forefront of dressing and pushing boundaries of fashion, some of whom are gay. But I think the fashion industry, like other kind of leisure industries, like caring professions, have traditionally attracted gay men. And so there is, I think, a gay aesthetic that runs through the fashion industry or fashion industries. You think about gay hairdressers, you think about the stylists. There was an article in one of the London newspapers supplements a year or so ago about, called "Are There Any Straight Men in Fashion?" So, you know, and identified another a number stereotype. Of key designers like Giles Deakin who, you know, and of course there are lots of straight men. Interestingly, the tailoring trade is much straighter than fashion. You know, a lot of the big name couturiers throughout the 20th century were gay, and there's been all sorts of interesting accusations of misogyny there about how gay designers dress women, you know, either uncomfortably or to be the kind of idealized body that they don't have. But then, you know, there are significant out gay designers who do menswear. Gaultier, for example, you know. And those who weren't out. You know, Hardy Amies, the designer, wasn't out at the time, but was creating quite groundbreaking menswear throughout the late 1960s into the 70s, and was gay. So, you know, where does that, just because you're not necessarily out saying, I'm a gay designer, I'm creating gay clothes, doesn't mean that there isn't something. And you know, that's something I think deserves some research at some point.
A future project for you. Thinking globally here, are there some countries that are better at gay fashion than others?
Well, London, England, obviously. We're just better at fashion anyway.
I guess a difference between straight fashion and gay fashion are there places that stand out? France is recognised as a fashionable place.
I don't know that there are so much now.
Is that the world economy that
I think it is the globalized world we live in? You know, I think you know there was a very San Francisco, New York created a very particular gay style in the 70s with the hypermasculine clone. I think there was a very particular queer look that came out of London's club culture in the early 80s that, you know, gave birth to people like Boy George that became a kind of global look. You know, your very own Lee Bowery abandoned you for London.
Well, they kind of had to back
then.
Well, yeah. You know, I think, but then, you know, equally we could say London is a hive of creativity for non-gay people as well. So I don't know that I can, that there is really necessarily anywhere that's better, if that was your question.
I read an article recently and the title was Camp is Dead, and the argument was that the gay community is losing its sense of individuality and ownness, be it people not going to clubs and gay precincts closing down, dance parties not being as edgy, people not getting dressed up to go to dance parties. That was a general theme. Is gay fashion a way that the gay community can retain some uniqueness, some gayness?
I mean, this is one of the challenges I've got on this research project, really. You know, in the 20th century of my previous work, it was very easy to identify that gay men dressed in a particular way at a particular time for a particular purpose, either to blend in invisibly or to stand out publicly or to stand out privately to one another. I think, you know, in the 21st century, in the post-metrosexual age, we can have a whole debate about that, but you know, I think in a world when it's not deemed to be so problematic for men to be interested in their dressed appearance generally, it doesn't necessarily signify peculiarity, read therefore queer.
The metrosexual trend.
Yeah, I think it, you know, it's meant there has been a breaking down of that. And I think also there's a worrying, I think, trend in the gay communities that vilifies effeminacy and campness. And I think that's possibly what that article was talking about. You know, you think about social media and the kind of the
straight looking,
the discussion, straight looking, straight acting, no femmes, no fats. You know, that a culture that supposedly should be about embracing diversity has become about a very hegemonic, masculine, straight, if I can use that word, way of looking, and a conformist way of looking in many ways.
We are exploring the world of gay fashion with our guest, Dr. Sean Cole from the London College of Fashion.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Scott from the Equality Network Scotland on the World Wide Wave.
We've got to keep going on the underwear theme here with our guest, Dr. Sean Cole, from the London School of Fashion. How did you get started on underwear? As a fashion item?
As opposed to wearing it myself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, underwear is something that is not seen. How has it become a fashion item?
Well, I don't know if it's not.
Well, until
seen,
people started pulling their pants down. And
the way it started was I was writing about gay fashion, and you know, there were lots of people I spoke to talked about the kinds of underwear they wore, and certainly we talked about the 60s earlier. You know, as men's clothing became tighter, so underwear changed, and you were talking about new fabrics. You know, the introduction of nylon, the introduction of man-made fabrics for stretchy, tighter underwear. So I was writing about gay men and underwear, and then was asked to write various things. And then an opportunity, a publisher approached me and said, you know, we've got a book about women's underwear. There doesn't really seem to be much about men's underwear. And what there was often, you know, we're doing it here, and it's a world of puns and jokes, isn't it? You know, I just had to give in and realise you can't talk seriously about underwear without the jokes. You know, a brief history of underwear, for example.
Take my wife.
So, there was just an opportunity, you know, like writing about gay men and fashion. There was a history was needed. Because there is a long and interesting history, or a short and interesting history, if you like.
Is that much more dominant in the gay community, underwear being a thing, being something that you seek out as an item of fashion, as opposed to going down to the, you know, local Kmart and pulling off the rack?
On my anecdotal evidence would say yes.
I think they are, and I think underwear companies have been extremely clever at targeting Calvin Klein, you know. Calvin Klein's Y fronts, which aren't Y fronts technically, you know, were woven by the same people as wove Jockey Y fronts. They were made basically the same model. He took the rise, took the waistline down. He modelled, he tried out his own models at Fire Island on a summer to see which were the most successful. You know, the company targeted gay men because, well, you know, we've got the pink pound, the pink dollar. You can buy.
But he famously denied that, and he said that we don't aim to appeal to the gay market. We aim to appeal, period. But we know that's all lies.
He just wants the gay market first.
Yeah, but then, you know, his marketing managers have subsequently, in the unauthorized biographies, have said that, you know, there was certainly a gay consumer in mind, and there are, you know, a whole swathe of companies. And I think, you know, e-retail has allowed for tiny, you know, small startup companies to sell the weird and the wonderful particularly enhancement underwear, you know, your very own Aussie bum.
We don't know what you mean.
No, that is so popular. I spend quite a bit of time in New York, and the number of people that only know about Australia because of Aussie bum underwear is extraordinary.
So talking about Australia, I mean, we've given the world the Ocker Bushman with the Akubra hat, beach bums, and Priscilla Queen of the Desert. Where does Australia sit in the fashion stakes, and Melbourne in particular, because we are seen as the fashion capital of Australia? Are we up there with the best? Be honest. Be brutally honest. You can only generate messages to
It's almost the end of the show, Sean.
The point when I say yes diplomatically, and you know, all you fashionable gay men out there, come and talk to me. I'd really love to hear from you. Plug my own work quickly. I think there's a growing world of fashion, isn't there? And I think the dominant four cities that have dominated the fashion world for the last, you know, decades: Paris, Rome, New York, London, Tokyo, adding into that, are beginning to break down. And, you know, I think Melbourne has a long tradition. It has excellent training in fashion design. You know, it has a great fashion week. It has great designers and great ideas coming out of it. So I think there is space for an Australian fashion.
You mentioned your survey, the study that you're undertaking. You're only here for a limited time, and you're looking for people to get involved. What do you want people to do, and how do they get involved in your research project?
I'm interested in talking to as many gay men as will talk to me, from 18 to 80, all shapes, all sizes, from all kinds of backgrounds, about why you dress the way you dress. What is it that you choose to wear, and why do you wear those clothes? Probably the best way would be to send me an email.
Yep.
Or will you put that on your website?
We will certainly put it on our Facebook page, so W3Joy on Facebook, and we'll leave it with the front desk as well. So 1300JOY949 to be a part of Dr. Sean Cole's project. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your very intriguing insights into the world of gay men's fashion.
Thank you for asking me.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Mahida from Nigeria, and you are on World Wide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. A huge thank you to our guest, Dr. Sean Cole from the London School of Fashion. Don't forget the Bowie exhibition at Acme at Federation Square until November 1.
Thank you to all the people who actually contacted us this week on our Facebook page. We very much respect and love all of you. It's W3Joy. So we've had a whole bunch of people, David, Brian, Ali, Kamsi, Emmanuel, Cindy, and a heap more. And thank you, as always, to the lovely Gordon at the front desk.
Next week, we are off to Armenia. We'll be back same bat time, same bat channel, here on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.